Thank you very much, Ken. Hello, everyone, and welcome to the Seven Steps to Awakening. It's good to see you all. I'm going to start with a song. sometimes I feel like I just jump right in a little too quickly, but I have nothing to share, so I'm just going to jump right in and start with a song. This is just a new artist that I've kind of discovered by accident playing around on YouTube. Well, I don't know if she's new. She's new to me. Her name is Carrie Newcomer. I don't know if some of you guys know her. And I'm still getting to know her songs. I don't know them well, so I'm not 100% sure what's in this song that I'm about to play. But the title is very appropriate. It's called Sanctuary. So let's have a listen and to Carrie Newcomer.
Will you be my refuge, my haven in the storm? Will you keep the embers warm when my fire's all but gone? Will you remember and bring me sprigs of rosemary? Be my sanctuary till I can carry on, carry on. Carry on. This one knocked me to the ground. This one dropped me to my knees. I should have seen it coming, but it surprised me. Will you be my refuge, my haven in the storm? Will you keep the embers warm when my fire's all but gone? Will you remember and bring me sprigs of rosemary? Be my sanctuary till I can carry on, carry on, carry on. In a state of true believers, on streets called us and them, it's gonna take some time till the world feels safe again. Will you be my refuge, my haven in the storm? Will you keep the embers warm when my fire's all but gone? Will you remember and bring me sprigs of rosemary? Be my sanctuary till I can carry on, carry on, carry on. You can rest here in Brown Chapel, or with a circle of friends, a quiet grove of trees, or between two bookends. Will you be my refuge, my haven in the storm? Will you keep the embers warm when my fire's all but gone? Will you remember? Bring me sprigs of rosemary. Be my sanctuary till I can carry on, carry on, carry on, carry on.
Beautiful. Yeah, beautiful. Maybe I'll play another one of her songs in a little bit since I'm getting to know her right now. But again, hi, everyone. Welcome to the Seven Steps to Awakening. For those of you who like to read along, let me give you a link. I'm wondering if there isn't a 7 steps class out there somewhere, because when I come to my 7 steps to awakening website, it tells me, how many people have been reading the website lately. And this isn't a super popular website. It's kind of in the background. But I notice that there's these spikes on unusual days. They're not the days I'm teaching. It looks like it was probably Saturday, 40 people. It went up from like 2 to 40 people. So I'm wondering if somebody out there has a 7 Steps to Awakening class where you're going through these audios and with a bunch of people or something. I don't know where these spikes are coming from. They happen about once or twice a week. So maybe you guys know, maybe you don't know where they're coming from. It's kind of funny, kind of unusual. We are going to begin tonight with number 740 in step 3 from the Yoga Vasistha. Let me read the quote to you. When the seed for the world appearance, which is the ego sense, has been destroyed, the world appearance goes with it. Even as the mirror gets misted by moisture, the true self is veiled by the unreal ego sense. This ego sense gives rise to all the rest of this world appearance. When it goes, then the self shines by its own light, even as the sun shines when the veiling cloud is blown away. So let me read that to you one more time. When the seed for the world appearance, which is the ego sense, has been destroyed, the world appearance goes with it. Even as the mirror gets misted by moisture, the self is veiled by the unreal ego sense. This ego sense gives rise to all the rest of this world appearance. When it goes, then the self shines by its own light, even as the sun shines when the veiling cloud is blown away. So that is the quote, and I am looking at the journal entry 740A. This is what the journal entry says. The observer is necessary to see the world. Subject is needed to see object. Mind is necessary to perceive something where there is nothing. Acknowledge truth. Without I, there is nothing to observe. Everything arises after I. Excuse me. Let me get a drink. It's funny because I think I made a declaration to you all last week, and that declaration must genuinely be in my heart, because I feel that probably what I would have done a month or two ago if I had read this quote is I would have gone into this teaching about how we'll know when we're awake when there is no world. But something has happened in me lately, as I mentioned last week. That something has come about as a result of my forget everything spiritual aspiration. In that I don't want to say something is true if I don't know it from my own direct experience. And I don't know this from my own direct experience. Now that doesn't mean that I'm saying it's not true. I think I also said last week, I am open to the possibility. I am open to the possibility that when awakening is complete and there is no ego sense, that the world disappears. I'm also open to the possibility that those words, the world disappears, might mean something that I can't even imagine. And so what I feel when I read a quote like that is not to teach something. Not to teach something. I think one thing that has happened to me in this last month or so is that I don't want to be caught up in believing. I don't want to be caught up in thinking something is true. I don't want to be caught up in thinking I know. Recently, there's a man who has been writing to me. He wants me to join him in a project, and he's asked me not to share information about the project, so I won't. But one of the things that, it's a very interesting project, by the way, but one of the things that he's saying to me in these letters is about which teachings are right and which teachings are wrong. And I just find that there's something in me that just doesn't want to go anywhere near that. Like, I don't want to have anything to do with saying which teachings are right and which teachings are wrong. And so I told him that. I said, you know, I just don't feel like I want to be a part of this project. I don't want to have anything to do with getting involved in that. What I feel like I want to be is open and innocent and available for truth without forming any opinions, without putting up any blocks or any obstacles at all. And, you know, I have this beloved teacher that you all know, Michael Langford, who wrote this wonderful book, Menonasa. And this wonderful book is his, that he's collected this wonderful book, the quotes in The Seven Steps to Awakening, right? And he says that Manonasa has happened to him. And he says that the world disappears. And in his book, Manonasa, he explains how, if the world disappears, how we still see a Michael Langford operating in the world. And I, in my present position, don't want to form an opinion about that. I don't want to form an opinion that believes that what he is saying is true, and I don't want to form an opinion that believes that what he's saying is not true. I don't want to be on either side. I want to be open and innocent and available. And that seems to be all that I want. Let's see, Jim has written in the room, perhaps the world disappears from consciousness when we accept ourselves, our environment, and our mental state as perfection. Perhaps. I like the way you began with perhaps, because like I said, I'm open to the possibility. I'm not saying that this might not be the ultimate truth. And if it is the ultimate truth, I am as determined as ever to have that direct experience. But if it's not the ultimate truth, well, then that's okay with me too, because I, you know, when I started this path, something in my mind wanted to say party, which is a good way of looking at the path. When I started this party, you know, my very earliest prayer that I think started me in this direction was way back when I was closer to 30 But that prayer was a very simple, although heartfelt, prayer. And the prayer was to show me the truth. I don't care what it is. And I think that sometimes when we get on these spiritual paths, and it doesn't matter which spiritual path we're on, the Buddhist path, the Christian path, the Hindu path, the non-dual path, the Course in Miracles path, we learn what truth is, and then without knowing it as a direct experience ourselves, we adopt it as a belief. It doesn't matter whether I'm adopting the belief that Jesus Christ is my Savior and I'm going to heaven, and since He's not your Savior, you're going to hell, or whether I adopt the belief that the world disappears in awakening. And if it's a belief, it's a belief. It's purely intellectual. Now I notice Jim is saying, does there even need to be an ultimate truth? I guess it depends on the way you define the word ultimate. Maybe if we just take ultimate out and just say truth. And yeah, I do think that there's a truth. Everything in me says that something is true and everything else is false. There's a truth. So, what I prefer to do right now is just to look at my direct experience and see what I know to be true and what I know to be false, not true, in my own direct experience. And fortunately, I have come to see a lot of stuff that's not true. And with everything I see that's not true, I am freer. And as I become freer, I am discovering something. and then the word stop. I am discovering something. And then the word stop, and so I'll stop. So let's look at the quote again, and let's see what's here that's useful in this quote, what's here that's helpful to us on this journey, if we're going to take a legitimate journey without believing that the journey is going to end in a specific definition. In a specific destination, I meant to say. Let's see what's useful in this quote to help us on a legitimate journey without believing that we're going to end up at a specific destination. So, when the seed for the world appearance, which is the ego sense, now this is saying the seed is the ego sense. And right there, I think that we have something extremely valuable to contemplate. Because I told you that I have looked at a lot of things and I've, you know, been looking at what is not true. And one thing that is not true, absolutely not true, is the ego sense. The ego sense being the belief that I am a particular person. That is absolutely not true. And I know that because I have questioned this the thoughts that seem to make up this person called Regina. I have questioned that. And as I've questioned that very, very deeply, I've kind of watched that house of cards fall down so that I know that there really isn't anything there. Now, that doesn't mean that the ego has died for me. That doesn't mean that I am claiming Manonasa or that I am claiming awakening or anything like that. What that does mean at this point is that knowing that that ego sense is nothing, I don't need to take it seriously. I don't need to give it credence. I don't need to pay attention to it. It is still present. In fact, the movie that Jacqueline has us watching this month is A Beautiful Mind. And I think A Beautiful Mind is a great way to describe this. And the beautiful mind, remember, he is schizophrenic. And if you haven't seen the movie yet, I'll try not to give away too much. But I think most of us have probably seen the movie before. But he is schizophrenic. And he finally decides to beat schizophrenia by not paying attention to these characters that he perceives as real, but no one else can see them. And by the end of the movie, as you know, they are still there, but they have fallen into the background. And you could say sanity has come into the foreground because the insanity has fallen into the background. That's what my current experience feels like. My current experience feels like that, you know, like the ego is still there, but it's fallen into the background. Yeah, that feels legitimate. So it's fallen into the background. I don't need to give it any attention. It doesn't really disturb me or upset me or bother me in any way right now. But it's not dead. It's still there in the background, which means I can't yet say what happens when the ego is dead. I can't say when the ego is dead whether there is or is not a world appearance. But what I do know, or if it even dies, Jacqueline says, yes, or if it even dies, thank you. But what I do know, and this is really important for all of us, regardless of whether these other things are true or not true, what is true is that the ego sense, that personal self, that person that I think I am, is not who I am. And what is also true is that as long as I believe that person is what I am, as long as I believe it and I am fully attached to it, I am creating suffering for myself and others. Others who also believe in their ego sense. I couldn't really create suffering for someone who doesn't believe in their ego sense. No matter how much I act up, they're going to be okay. But of course, most people believe in their ego sense too. And so we rub up against each other and that creates suffering. So this ego sense thing, I'm not going to say that it doesn't have any usefulness, because maybe it does. Some teachers say that it does. Some teachers, like, would I know how to play my role as the mother of Jasmine with zero ego sense? I don't know. Again, I don't want to go there. So some people say it does have some value. Some people say it has no value at all. I'm going to stand in my firm new middle, which is no opinion. What I will say is that believing that I am that seems to have no value at all. I cannot find any value in believing that that's what I am. I can only find value in seeing clearly that that is not me, and therefore I'm not entrapped. I do not have to believe those thoughts. I do not have to act out that script. So seeing through the ego sense seems to be important, critical. So when the seed for the world appearance, which is the ego sense, has been destroyed, the world appearance goes with it. Now, there may be truth in that. I mean, there just may be. And this is, again, coming from direct experience. The reason I say there may be truth in that, without going into believing, just going into looking at my direct experience. Can I read that again? Of course. Here we go. When the seed for the world appearance, which is the ego sense, has been destroyed, the world appearance goes with it. So when the ego is destroyed, when manonasa occurs, the world appearance disappears, right? And so again, I'm just looking at direct experience. I am not going into believing. But I can find an element of truth in that even with my current experience. And that element of truth is, when I go to sleep at night and I am not dreaming, the ego sense goes away. During deep sleep, there is no Regina. There's no me. There's no ego at all during deep, non-dreamless sleep. And there is also no world of any type, no thought of a world. Now, you can close your eyes right now, and the ego sense is still present, even though your eyes are closed. So your eyes are closed and you cannot see a world, but we can't say that the world has disappeared, because if you sit here for a few minutes and just, you know, be quiet, for most people, the thinking about the world occurs. So even with the eyes closed and a world not seen, there's still a world in the mind. And they're still thinking about what I got to do, or what he or she said, or how long are we going to sit here with our eyes closed, or, you know, whatever. There's still a world. But when you're in deep sleep and there's no ego sense at all, no I, no me, there is also no world. No thought of a world, no world at all. Therefore, it is possible that this is true. Based on my own limited experience, there's the possibility that there can only be a world after there is an I, a me. And so again, I can accept this as a possibility. Also, the question comes, you know, people often talk about, it's not said in this particular quote, but people often talk about how when there is no ego, there is only bliss. You know, is that true? Is that a belief I want to adopt, that there is only bliss? Well, again, if I look at my limited direct experience, it's very funny, actually. First of all, any of us who have a deep, deep sleep, somehow when we wake up, even though we have no memory of sleep, because there's no time and space in sleep, we have no memory of sleep, somehow something in us knows that that sleep was, what word do we want to use? Really, really good? Blissful? I don't know. I mean, we can't really put a descriptor on it because we don't have a memory of it. But there's this knowing, right? There's this knowing that it was absolute peacefulness. I'll call it that, that it was absolute peacefulness. And when we don't sleep well, we crave that sleeping. Right, we crave that deep sleep because of that blissfulness or peacefulness or restfulness or whatever you want to call it that comes from that. I had surgery a couple of times a couple years ago. One was just a checkup. What's that checkup they do when we're 50? Colon, right? Is that what they go in and check out, the colon, and you have to go into surgery for that? Yeah. when I woke up from that, that, of course, is the deepest sleep, as you know, surgery. That is the deepest sleep that we seem to experience. But when I woke up from that, that knowing was there, that knowing that I had been in that blissful, peaceful nothingness was there. And so when I broke my wrist sometime later and I had to go into surgery again, I was actually looking forward to that. I remember I told someone about how much I really enjoyed that, and they commented that Michael Jackson did too. That's why he hired a doctor to give him that same drug so that he could go into that deep, 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 deep state. So it seems like, although I have no memory of that being out in surgery, there's no memory of that. There's absolutely no time, no space, no I, no world. There was this knowing when I woke up of that, I'm going to call it bliss. So is it possible, even though the mind cannot imagine it, is it possible that there is some kind of an awakening where there is absolutely no I at all? Therefore, there is no world, there is no time, there is no space, and it is completely blissful. I would have to say it's based on my limited experience that it's possible, although I cannot imagine it. Now here comes the next interesting question. Do I want that? And the answer that's in me right now is that so I see that to some degree as inevitable. And I don't know how to describe that, because that is at an intuitive level rather than at a thinking mind level, not at the level of belief. There's this intuitive feeling that this deep peace is inevitable. I guess that's all I need to say. I think that probably this is why ego death, assuming that it does occur, this is why ego death is so frightening. Is because the mind cannot comprehend that deep peace, and it sees it as death. I, sitting here right now with a mind as my lens, cannot comprehend that deep peace. But I know that it's not death. So I guess I see it as inevitable, and I see it as not death. Not an end. And then, is that something that somehow you experience and see a world too? or you absolutely do not see a world, absolutely do not know time and space, I can't say. But I do know that this person, Regina, even though she is becoming less interesting to me and she's fading into the background, I do know that she's not dead, and I do know that she's going to die. I do know that. She's not dead now, and she is going to die. So what's left when she's dead? I think the only way to find that out is not to be attached to her. Not to be attached to her. So that it's not a me dying. And somehow in that detachment, I think there's a seeing, there's an awareness. And then, of course, where there's a seeing, where there's an awareness, there can be discovery. There can be realization. Yeah, and Jim is saying some interesting things. I currently view death as an extended nap with a loosening of the sense of separation. Maybe. Maybe. Without a personal point of view, could there be a perceptive sense of everywhereness? Maybe. Maybe. I kind of like the maybe right now. I like taking what I know, which is that I am not this Regina person, and that there is nothing valuable in believing I'm this Regina person. Not that there's nothing valuable in the Regina person. I'm not saying that. There may indeed be things quite valuable in the Regina person, but there's nothing valuable in believing I am the Regina person. Listening to all of these possibilities, trusting this intuitive knowing that I seem to have, which we just went through, that there is, I'm going to call it, for lack of better words, a bliss, even in that deep, deep peace where there's no world, no space, and no time. And just see. What's wrong with just wait and see? What's wrong with being as aware as I can be at this possible moment? You know, staying with my aspiration of forget everything. Just being deep, deep, deep in the heart, being curious and finding out, why do I have to develop beliefs? And you know what seems to happen, I think, to all of us? I think that when we develop a belief, we harden a little bit. We harden. And there's something in us, once we adopt that belief, it becomes a part of our identity. Maybe not completely consciously. Like maybe I wouldn't go around saying, I'm a person who believes the world disappears, or I'm a person who believes the world doesn't disappear. Maybe we would, but maybe we wouldn't. But something in us hardens. That becomes a part of our identity. And at some point, we may be in a position where we feel like we have to defend our belief, or we may be in a position where we feel like we don't like another person because they believe differently. We may feel conflict with another person because of different beliefs. I don't think any of that is necessary. And if I don't know, if I genuinely don't know, genuinely, then, you know, I can do what I just now did with Jim, which is really beautiful. You know, Jim's just asking questions, first of all. He's not saying these are his beliefs. But he says, without a personal point of view, could there be a perceptive sense of everywhereness? I can say, maybe. You know, he says, I currently view death as an extended nap with the loosening of the sense of separation. Maybe. You know? I don't need to take a side with Jim. I don't need to say, oh, no, no, no. And here's what I would have said at one time, okay? Oh, no, 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 Jim. You know, when you die, you have the exact same state of mind that you had when you died, and you'll just go into another life and wake up right where you left off. Nothing happens in death. I don't know that. I don't know that. So why should I get on one side of the line with Jim and argue with Jim when I don't know? Because I don't know. I don't know. There is something that continues past death. And I know this from my direct experience. You know, my dad has a belief in death. He believes that when you die, that's the end. There's nothing else. At least I appear to know. Maybe if I question it very deeply, I'll have to say I don't know. But let me tell you, let's just go through this together, shall we? I have been visited more than once by people who were what we would call dead. The first time I remember such a visitation was very, very subtle. And in fact, at first, I didn't even recognize it as a visitation. I was at work and just working on something, you know, typing on a computer, and all of a sudden I was flooded with all of these memories of my uncle. Now, my uncle was actually my mother's sister's husband, so we weren't blood related. And my mother's sister had divorced him many years ago, so in a way, I guess he really wasn't even my uncle anymore. And I hadn't seen him in many years, but when I was a young child, he was my uncle. And so I'm sitting there typing. All of a sudden, I'm flooded with all of these very, very clear, clear memories of my uncle. And I just felt just this love, love, love for him. It was just wonderful. And, you know, I didn't know where these memories came from. But then later that day or that evening, I found out that he had died. And I just really felt strongly that was him, that he came, you know, and embraced me at work. And this is where all of these memories came from. And since then, I've had many experiences like that where I'll, you know, smell someone. I can smell them. Like, I didn't even realize I knew what they smelled like, but suddenly I can smell them, and then I find out that they died. So the reason I know that these aren't imagination is because I didn't know the person was dead yet, right? If I'd known they were dead, then I could, you know, in my mind make up the experience, but I didn't know they were dead. Yeah, and Jim is saying he's had these experiences. Christina is saying she's had these experiences, right? So there seems to be something beyond what we call death. And some of you may even know that in October, I saw a ghost. You know, I have a picture of it, and, you know, I've shown some of you. Some of you have seen the picture of my ghost. So there seems to be something beyond, you know, when the body dies, right? There seems, from my own direct experience, that doesn't appear to be a belief. There appears to be some evidence of that. Now, is that true? Why don't we go ahead and question that for a moment before we have a belief that there is something beyond life or beyond this physical life, right? Let's go with Yoga Vasistha's teaching here. It says, when the seed for the world appearance, which is the ego sense, has been destroyed, the world appearance goes with it. So, of course, what we all know from our study is that this world is not real. This is what the study teaches us, right? This world is not real. This world does not exist. This is just an appearance. This is not to be believed. The fact that this is a table is not to be believed. You know, in A Course in Miracles, somewhere, I think someone recently told me it was lesson 28. I didn't look it up, but somewhere around lesson 28, Jesus talks about how we could become enlightened from this table if we could see it for what it is instead of what we believe it to be. So if this table is not real, then are my experiences of visiting relatives and ghosts any evidence of anything? Or was it just a temptation to adopt another belief? Another, I know, based on my experience. Hell, I know based on my experience, based on, you know, the genitals that I see when I go to the bathroom, I know I'm a woman. Is that right? Is that true, that I'm a woman? The reason this questioning is so important, at least to me, is because if I go in and question very carefully in the way I'm doing right now, I can catch myself before I adopt a belief. I can catch myself before I take a position. Do I want to get in a position with my father where my father is saying, you know, when you're dead, you're dead? And he has evidence of that. I mean, you know, based on what his experience is, living on the farm, you know, butchering animals, you know, his mother and father are dead. His evidence is when you're dead, you're dead. My evidence is, no, that's not true. There's something beyond life. What if we're both just experiencing the effects of our believing? Now, some people may not like this deep questioning because some people want to adopt a belief. They want to have something to believe. But what I read to you last week, and I could read it again, but what I read to you last week was paragraph 7 from lesson 189 in A Course in Miracles. And what does it say? It asks us to let go of everything. It asks us to let go of everything we think is true or false. So there is life after what we call death, true or false. Either way, we're asked to let go of it. This is where I'm going now, which probably is really going to change my teaching quite a bit. Because I'm letting go of everything. I see Jacqueline has her hand up. Jacqueline, I'll turn the mic over to you.
Yeah, thanks, Regina. I hope I'm not interrupting. But I asked the question on the board, and I didn't know if you saw it, but I'm getting hung up on it. And that is the difference between taking things on faith and adopting beliefs. So, for example, you tell me I'm not a body. No, not you. Okay, the Course in Miracles tells me I'm not a body. Or that the only thing that's true is that which is changeless and eternal. But also that's not my experience. So where do we draw that line between taking those things on faith, you know, that they resonate, and certainly therefore I have adopted those beliefs. See, I don't understand the difference between taking those things on faith and adopting beliefs. Yes. I'll let go of the mic. Thank you.
Yeah, to me, when you get back into saying that is possible, that's possible and that resonates and it feels right to continue to do the practice that might allow me to discover for myself. When you say it's possible and I'm willing to look and see if I can discover that for myself, that's what I would call taking it on faith. It's possible and I'm willing to walk this path and find out for myself. And I think you were here last week. I talked about last week how once upon a time, you know, what I called the Holy Spirit within would tell me that the reason I was suffering is because I was just looking away from the peace, the joy that was always here, that causeless happiness. And I really had a hard time believing I was just looking away from it. But I was willing to say it was possible. It's possible that somehow, even, you know, when I'm feeling guilty and angry and everything else, that somehow there's something here that's always at peace, that's always happy, and I'm just looking away from it. And because I was willing to say it's possible, I did the work that I call purification, which has now brought me to a point where I have an experience of that peace, and I can also look away from it. I can forget for a moment and look away and, you know, get annoyed, but then I see that, oh, I looked away, and I just turn my head and look back again, right? I see it now. It's my direct experience. So if you don't accept it as possible, I would call that faith. Possible and worthy of your investigation, worthy of you finding out for yourself, then you're never going to move. You're never going to move in that direction. But a belief, like I said, a belief is harder. A belief is saying, I know, when you don't know. I know this to be true. I know I'm right, and I know you're wrong, when you don't know that you're making that up. You don't know. If you have not, for lack of better words, gone that far into awakening yet, you don't know. You accept it maybe as a possibility, and you feel inclined to move in that direction and find out for yourself, but right this moment you don't know. Does that explain the difference between belief and taking it on faith, Jacqueline? I'll release the mic to see if you want to take it back. Oh, that does. Okay, good. So yeah, so don't misunderstand me as saying these things are not true. But here's what, I see. And that comment wasn't necessarily directed at you. That was directed to the general public, if you will. My job right now on this spiritual path is to become completely empty of everything. That's my job. That's what that forget everything means. I am to become completely empty of everything. And so what you are going to hear me doing is that, because I'm going to do my job right now. And I'm going to see where it takes me. Because I know the work I've done in the past, and it got me from A to B most definitely. So what happens when I jump off from point B and go into the questioning every belief, questioning every attachment, letting go of everything, when I'm completely empty, what am I going to find? The only way to find out, as far as I can tell, is to become completely empty. Not to sit around with a head full of ideas that I've read in books and say, this is true, this is true, this is true. No. No. You know, here we go. Probably going to be reading this just like over and over and over again, but whatever. Here we go. Lesson 189, paragraph 7. Here we go. Because this is my job now. Simply do this. Be still and lay aside all thoughts of what you are and what God is, all concepts you have learned about the world, all images you hold about yourself. Empty your mind of everything it thinks is either true or false or good or bad, of every thought it judges worthy, and all ideas of which it is ashamed. Hold on to nothing. Do not bring with you one thought the past has taught, nor one belief you ever learned before from anything. And remember, in October I saw a ghost. So my experience teaches me that there is life after death. And my experience teaches me that some of these souls that have passed on can hang around as a ghost, I have learned this from my direct experience. But then this book says, do not bring with you one thought the past has taught, nor one belief you ever learned before from anything. So I can say that I experienced, you know, something that appeared to be a ghost, but to take that as evidence that I now know that there is life after the body dies is not true. As far as I can tell, the only way for me to know that there is life after the body dies is to let this body die when the time comes. I'm not going to commit suicide. But let this body die, remain as aware as possible, as my current level of enlightenment will allow, through that process and see what I see. The only way to find out anything is to take the journey. And that's not the intellectual, that's just the direct experience. And why do I say that the physical death of this body will show me when seeing a ghost didn't? Because seeing a ghost is still secondhand. I am still perceiving something out there. That's still an appearance. And if the appearance just comes from the believing, right? And if the world is not real, which is the teaching, then the appearance doesn't prove anything other than what I believe. Or what we as a collective believe. Direct experience is the experience that I have directly, not indirectly through perception. So the only way to discover, to know, if there's life after physical death is to die. And the only way to find out what happens when the ego dies, again, if the ego dies, the only way to find out is to continue on this path, following intuitive guidance as to spiritual practice and such. And if there comes a point that we often call the eye of the needle experience, where it looks like the ego is about to die, the personal self, not the body, but the personal self is about to die, to allow it. Through allowing it to die, I will find out what's on the other side of that line. This has to be my direct journey. It's the only way I can know anything. So I didn't really talk about 740 very much. Like I said, I don't know what's going to happen to my teaching now. Because what was really happening, you know, 2 months ago, was I was reading this stuff and believing it. And this is how much this shift has occurred in such a short time. I was reading this stuff, I was believing this stuff, and I was teaching this stuff as if I knew it to be true. Why? Because I've read it. There are some things I know. I know that you can be genuinely happy. Genuinely happy. I know that you do not have to hold a grievance or a judgment, a negative. By judgment, I mean, you know, like choosing what is good and bad, what is right and wrong, and somehow holding apart the good from the bad. There's another type of judgment that's very helpful, like knowing it is not good to eat poop. Unfortunately, my dog doesn't know that. But, you know, there's another kind of judgment that where you're not holding anything apart. You just, you know, it's common sense judgment. But the kind of judgment where you separate and you hold apart, and I like her, but I don't like him, you don't need to have any of that. It's a good idea to know you shouldn't eat poop, right? Right, Phil? I see Phil saying LOL. So some judgment, discernment, whatever you want to call it, is good. But I know that you don't need judgment, the kind that separates. I know that you can be perfectly happy. I know that you can love everyone. And I know that I got this far by following this path, and so therefore I'm willing to continue to follow this path to see where else it goes. And maybe there's never an end. Maybe every time you get to a line and you cross it, there's another line, another journey. That seems also to be possible within the infinite, right? To always have another journey to take. And the only way to find out is to take the journey. So maybe next week I'll talk about 740 again, because I didn't really talk about it. We'll see what happens, see if I even can talk about it. If I can't, I don't know. We'll see what happens with that. What part of the word eternity do we have difficulty considering? All right, so what I am going to do now, because we are moving into the Awakening Together quarterly member meeting. So what I'm going to do is play a song to kind of break these two up. And then after I play the song, I'll come back and we'll have our member meeting, okay? Jacqueline says, thank you for your teaching. Yeah, I guess if that was a teaching, the beginning did not feel like a teaching right now. But we'll see what it turns out to be. So let me go back to, as I told you all, I am learning about this new artist named, well, I don't know if she's new. She's new to me, Carrie Newcomer. I played a song just a little bit ago, Sanctuary. I'm going to play another one of her songs called Room at the Table. This song I do know, and I really like it.
Let our hearts not be hardened to those living on the margins. There is room at the table for everyone. This is where it all begins. This is how we gather in. There is room at the table for everyone. And undone, but there is room at the table for everyone. Let us sing the new world in. This is how it all begins. There is room at the table for everyone. There is room for us all, and no gift is too small. There is room at the table for everyone. Everyone, if we share, come on, all our faith share. There is room at the table for everyone. No matter who you are, no matter where you're from, there is room at the table for everyone. Here and now we can be the beloved community. There is room at the table for everyone. There is room for us all, but no gift is too small. There is room at the table for everyone. There is enough if we share, come on, all our faith share. There is room at the table for everyone.
a cute video. I was watching a video. It's a very cute video. It shows all different kinds of people dancing. It starts with a little girl, but, you know, it shows just all kinds of people. And Jacqueline, I am recording still. It shows all kinds of people, you know, including Sufis and, you know, just people from all walks of life. So it's really a nice, nice video.